House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is March 20th, 2017. And the first item on the agenda is a public hearing on House Bill 2306. Call Lynn Saxon and Gary Roberts.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2306 directs the Oregon Health Authority to adopt rules requiring certain entities to share specific information related to criminal defendants who are unable to aid and assist in their own defense as a result of mental illness.
Representative Greenlick, would you like to make a few remarks?
Thank you. Yes, I would like to make a comment. I serve on the advisory committee to the state hospital, and you'll hear more about the problem from the superintendent, but I'd like to say these bills we're hearing today are very, very important. We think of the state hospital as part of our community mental health system, but in fact, two-thirds of the beds in the state hospital are occupied by forensic beds made up of both people who have been found guilty except for insanity and those that are in the aid and assist population. The bills we're hearing today are about how to minimize that aid and assist population, which a couple months ago had reached 250 beds of the 650 beds in the state hospital. It's a bit lower now, but it's still a big problem. So these are very important bills for us, and I'm really happy to have this panel talk to you about a bit more.
Okay, thank you, Representative. Please go ahead in any order.
Great. It's been a busy morning. Good afternoon, Chair Barker and members of the committee. I'm Lynn Saxton, Director of the Oregon Health Authority. I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 2306-1, which allows the courts, mental health providers, and the health authority to share information about defendants who are unable to aid and assist in their own defense. It also allows OHA to coordinate the best placement for defendants to receive mental health treatment. These individuals are also known as 370 defendants, which refers to the statute governing this issue. House Bill 2306-1 revises this statute to recognize that treatment for mental health is a health care decision that requires a coordinated effort between the Oregon Health Authority, the state hospital, law enforcement agencies, courts, and county mental health programs. House Bill 2306-1 authorizes these partners to share information about defendants who have been found unable to aid and assist. This is important information because OHA needs to know not only the level of the crime, misdemeanor A or felony C, but also about the specific crime. For example, a felony U could be murder, contempt of court, or selling liquor without a license. One is clearly a violent crime and the other two are not, and this information will help the Oregon Health Authority make informed decisions about treatment and safety. House Bill 2306-1 also authorizes the authority to coordinate where those defendants will receive restorative services at Oregon State Hospital, where it's the most expensive, funded by general fund dollars, or in the community where it's least disruptive to patients' lives and most likely to connect to the system of care that we are continuing to build and refine. Currently, Oregon's judges in 36 counties make decisions about where defendants should receive restorative services. Courts may default to sending defendants to the state hospital as the most accessible solution. The county, however, may be able to restore the defendant in the community, the better clinical setting at a lower cost with the natural support structure of family nearby. In many cases, when clinically appropriate, community treatment is the best option. When people are sent to the state hospital for 3 months, they often lose their jobs, their homes, or their pets, and they're separated from their friends, family, and other support systems. People should only be hospitalized when absolutely necessary. Indeed, the U.S. Supreme Court's Olmstead versus LC decision in 1999, which essentially says it is a violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act to institutionalize people when they could be served in the community. The Olmstead decision resulted in years of discussion between the U.S. Department of Justice and Oregon about steps Oregon needs to take to avoid a federal lawsuit and the consequences. Last year, the Oregon Health Authority and the U.S. Department of Justice, after many long hours, agreed upon what is known to both parties as the Oregon Performance Plan, in which OHA committed to treat people with mental illness in the community whenever safely possible. Similar to how the civil commitment process works in Oregon, House Bill 2306-1 aligns with the U.S. DOJ performance plan, and it's also consistent with state and federal laws. OHA expects House Bill 2306-1 provisions to free up state hospital beds and reduce emergency department psychiatric boarding for civil patients. Both circumstances impose an unnecessary cost burden on the state. Admissions for civil patients are often put on hold as the hospital must admit someone under a 370 order within 7 days or be held in contempt of court. Civil patients sometimes must wait longer to be admitted to the Oregon State Hospital while occupying a bed in an acute care wing of a regular hospital, often in local communities with insufficient resources to serve a high-need psychiatric population. In turn, people waiting for an acute care bed are languishing in emergency departments, and this is called and known as psychiatric boarding. As you will recall, the state of Washington was recently sued for its problem with psychiatric boarding in emergency rooms, and this amendment before you today will help the Oregon Health Authority avoid that outcome in our state. Most importantly, House Bill 2306 would allow the Health Authority and its community mental health partners to determine where to best serve defendants who need restoration in a coordinated and collaborative manner and can be safely in the community. One OHA budget driver is directly related to the substantial number of aid and assist patients at OSH who do not need hospital-level care. At the cost of more than $1,000 per day, with a median length of stay of 74 days, and a daily census as high as 240 people last year, this is a significant cost to state taxpayers. We would like the opportunity to take responsibility for this budget driver. House Bill 2306-1 gives us the tool to do just that. And for the record, we are very open to working with all the other stakeholders in this process to address any concerns they have about the language or the implementation of this bill. Any solution to this problem, this issue, must be a collaborative effort between ourselves, public safety officers, the judiciary, district attorneys, etc. The Oregon Health Authority supports House Bill 2306-1 and requests your support as well. Thank you.
So, good afternoon, Chair Barker, Vice Chair Olson, and Vice Chair Williamson, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Greg Roberts. I'm the superintendent of the Oregon State Hospital, and I'll be presenting the slide you're about to see. So, the first slide is simply an explanation of the 370 statute. It involves a court order that sends defendants for mental health treatment to the state hospital so they can be restored to competency so that they can aid and assist their attorney in presenting their own defense. So, our guiding principles, of course, are defendants who are mentally ill should receive the right treatment in the right setting at the right time. And the approach supports public safety, person-centered recovery, and, of course, wise use of state and county resources, as Mrs. Saxton referred. When a person comes to the state hospital as a 370 patient, as was stated, we have seven days from the signature on the court order to admit that person. And then when they come to the hospital, there are three possible outcomes. They become able to aid and assist, therefore competent to stand trial. They return to jail and await their trial. Or they're declared not yet able, meaning they're not yet competent to aid and assist their attorney, and people in the not yet able category remain at the state hospital. And the third possibility is that the person is declared after a period of time, a period of treatment, and multiple evaluations, they're declared never able to aid and assist, meaning that it's unlikely, not probable, that that person will regain competency in the foreseeable future. And in that case, the court dismisses the charges against the person and orders that the person be discharged, or if the person qualifies for civil commitment, initiates civil commitment proceedings. This is the significant graph. This displays the increase in the 370 census at the state hospital since January 2012,
when there were about 110 patients on average, 370 patients at the state hospital. As Mrs. Saxon indicated, the we had 244 370 patients at a time last year. That had significant consequences at the state hospital, again, because we're required to admit 370 patients within 7 days of the court order. We had to close one of our units that is designed to serve civil patients, and so that we could admit the 370 patients in accordance with the court orders. And that in turn leads to a backup on psychiatric emergency inpatient units in the community and emergency rooms as well. So the graph displays the steady increase in the 370 population over a period of about 5 years. You'll see that there is a recent decrease. We're in the 190s these days, but there's no systemic reason for that to be maintained. As you see, we've seen increases and decreases over a period of time, and the legislation that is under consideration is meant to address those systemic solutions so that we can resolve this problem. This is a snapshot of today's census at the state hospital. There are six counties in the state that are historically responsible for the highest number of 370 patients at the hospital. It's Multnomah, Lane, Marion, Washington, Douglas, and then the last bar there signify all other counties, which is around 30 combination of counties. And again, this slide summarizes what has already been mentioned, that the current length of stay for 370 patients, at least for people discharged in the year 2016, the average length of stay was 118 days, the median length of stay, so the median is 50% of people are above the line and 50 below, is 74 days. So the cost of care for one patient, the cost of care we've recently calculated as required for a 370 patient is a little over $1,000 per day. And so the average length of stay for a patient who stays 118 days is $129,000. And the median, 74 days times the average cost, is $81,000 per patient per episode. And the last slide refers to the agreement that's been reached between the state of Oregon and the United States Department of Justice to comply with the Supreme Court 1999 Olmstead decision regarding the institutionalization of people who could be treated in the community as opposed to being hospitalized at a state hospital. So the specifics there were required to discharge 90% of our civil patients within 120 days of admission unless they continue to require our level of care, and a three-year plan where this year is year one, 75% of civil patients who are ready to leave the hospital must leave within 30 days. Next year, that increases to 85% within 25 days, and the year three of the agreement is 90% of people who are ready to leave the hospital should be leaving within 20 days of being declared ready to place. So, thank you.
Okay, questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next call, Chris Bonif, Bob Junedep, and Becky Child.
Hi, Representative Barker and fellow committee members. My name is Becky Child. I'm the interim chair of the Oregon State Hospital Advisory Board. And I would like to offer the advisory board support of this bill with the Dash One amendments. I would like to call your attention to a letter that the advisory board sent to Representative Kotek and President Courtney back dated February 19th of 2016, that was to call your attention to this issue. This is not an issue that has just arisen. This has been going on for a number of years. Since I am the last original member of the Hospital Advisory Board, We have spent hours talking about this issue over those years, and have been really puzzled by the inability of our system's ability to respond to this issue in a significant way. And as somebody who's been hospitalized myself, I understand what being in a hospital and out of my community, away from people that care about me, not having control of my own life, of when I get to go to bed, when I decide, I those kinds of things, those little dignities really add up. And the advisory board would like to see something substantially done, and this bill would be an effort towards that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Chris Bonneff. I'm here representing the Oregon State Chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We're a grassroots advocacy organization, membership governed, composed of people directly affected by mental illness, those of us who live with illness or have family members. We provide education and support programs through our 15 chapters across the state of Oregon, serving approximately 8,000 Oregonians a year. I'm here to speak in favor of House Bill 2306 and the Dash 1 amendments specifically, prefacing my comments by this. What we're talking about here are health care dollars. What we spend at the state hospital are dollars allocated by the Oregon State Legislature to deliver health care. More than ever, as many of us know, we need to spend those dollars very wisely. Particularly given the budget circumstances we're in. One of the great twists in this conversation is that one of the participants in that healthcare, and particularly at the Oregon State Hospital, is our criminal justice system. And whether wise or not, we grant that system a blank check to use this precious healthcare resource as it sees fit. Where we would be supportive or are supportive of the Dash 1 amendments is it sets in motion what we think are very reasonable expectations and a reasonable process so that we can spend that money more wisely, so that we can continue to maximize our delivery of health care for people directly affected by mental illness who need not only the state's most intensive level of care, but the state's most expensive level of care. You saw the average cost per patient per bed dedicated only 370 costs the state of Oregon $400,000 a year, regardless of how many people we put in there. That is a very expensive resource. By not having something reasonable in place, by not doing a better job of gatekeeping on the front end, the impact not only is on our state hospital, it actually is on the people that I'm here to represent. We are denied care. When we use a very expensive resource, when we bottle it up inappropriately, somebody who needs that level of care or somebody who needs care is denied that care. Again, these are health care dollars. If we stay on the path we are on, pretty much the only way you will get into the Oregon State Hospital is if you commit a crime. And again, that's why we support this. It's what we think is a reasonable, common sense proposal that both uses a very precious resource wisely and both addresses what is a public safety need. And I'll close with a tale of two families. And this is the stuff that we deal with week in and week out. One family who has a loved one living somewhat successfully with severe schizophrenia on his own steals a $7 sandwich from a local grocery store. 5 months later, to the tune of a couple hundred thousand dollars, somebody's back living independently where they were living, all over a $7 sandwich. That our provision of care was inefficient for this person. He didn't need to be in the state hospital, but he was in the state hospital because, again, our process set in place pretty much guarantees that that's the only place we will send you, whether it's appropriate or not, you're going there. Then there's the family I was working with last week where their loved one, a 35-year-old young man, married with a child, was in his third emergency room in a couple of weeks because we couldn't find a bed for him. Because those beds were taken up by people who should be in the Oregon State Hospital, but we can't put them in the Oregon State Hospital because we have people who shouldn't be there who are defaulting there through our criminal justice system. And so you begin calling it every favor, in fact, favors you never even got. You begin making up favors so you can find this young man a bed. I would, on behalf of NAMI, we strongly encourage you to support 2306-1, and we applaud the Oregon Health Authority for being willing to work with all stakeholders, because we know for some stakeholders this is a very critical issue. But we urge your support so that we can continue to use this resource wisely, so that we can continue to get people help where they need it, and so we don't, the second family I described doesn't have to go through what they went through to access a healthcare resource. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Bob Junduff. I'm from Disability Rights Oregon. Disability Rights Oregon provides legal-based advocacy services to Oregonians with disabilities across the state. We've been working with patients at the state hospital since 1986 in order to address problems that they have with conditions of care and the ability to transition out of the hospital and back into the community. A lot of what we're talking about today has been driven by planning at the highest levels of the Oregon Health Authority, which has been driven to some extent by an agreement with the U.S. Department of Justice to enforce the legal and civil rights of people in the hospital to receive treatment in the least restrictive, appropriate environment. I just want to tell you a little bit about that agreement, because it highlights what we're trying to do here, and it, not only in this bill, but in the other ones that you're going to hear today. When the U.S. Department of Justice came to investigate Oregon to see if it was in compliance with Olmstead versus LC, it had recently entered into a settlement agreement with the state of Delaware, in which a multi-page document laid out all of the things that the state of Delaware had to do under a court order and court monitoring in order to make sure that people were not being channeled into state hospitals inappropriately and were able to leave state hospitals when they were ready to leave. The state of Oregon entered into discussions with the Department of Justice, and to the amazement of many people around the country, people who do the kind of work that I do, the Department of Justice was convinced that the state of Oregon had a health care reform process going on that was working toward providing more robust mental health chemical dependency services in the community, and was intent upon measuring outcomes for those services and using their money more wisely, bringing down the cost curve of health services. The Department of Justice decided to go along with that, and in accordance with promises from the state, we entered upon a process whereby, rather than there being forced mandates by a federal court judge directing the state what to do, there was an agreement in which the state agreed that when it looked at its pot of money for mental health and how it spent it, that it would try to move more resources to community services and away from state hospital services, so that we could get upstream, get people the treatment and crisis services that they need in the community, and not end up funneling people into the state hospital inappropriately, so that they would have even more trouble getting out because there weren't the resources in the community. Now, everyone agreed that this was going to be a process that took some time. You don't do it overnight. So there's a multi-year rollout for this. What we have found, and these bills reflect, is that the criminal justice system has been seeing that there are more bed opportunities at the state hospital, and there has been a flood of folks into the hospital to fill those beds, when in our estimation the same types of services can be created in our communities to make sure that safely and effectively we can divert people from jails, move them into appropriate mental health services, and then make sure that these processes work more efficiently. House Bill 2306 is designed to be one piece of that puzzle. It's not going to fix it, but it is one piece, and that is why DRO supports the bill.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, Representative Isle?
Well, thank you very much for bringing the bill. Thanks to the authority for participating in it. You just said what I was thinking, and that is this doesn't seem like anywhere near enough to really address the problems that I'm hearing about. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are. Are we going to see a change in the behavior of the courts, of the various other parties, by simply saying, okay, folks, now you got to talk to each other?
Representative Barker, Representative Val, amazingly, it has worked here in Marion County. Marion County has gone through a process of bringing all the players to the table to try to see how we can more effectively use the resources that we have in place. Part of that has been being able to have a mental health professional at the jail in order to do effective screening at the front door to make sure that people aren't getting into jail inappropriately, and to have the respite and crisis services available in the community, all the while doing an assessment of risk to make sure that the community is safe. It has been successful here. We have, and this model has been adopted to some degree in other counties. It needs to spread, and it needs to be resourced to do so. I think this bill is part of the solution to getting there.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you, panel. Next call, I'll call Mary Sell and Aaron Knott.
Mr. Chair, if I may comment while they're coming up. The real issue is not to be arresting these people. I've had that conversation with the sheriff of Washington County, who very much weighs up. There have been people in the state hospital for littering. That person should never have been arrested. Get a cup of coffee and a shower and a place to stay that night, rather than arresting them and putting them in the state hospital with $1,000 a day. It's just crazy.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, Vice Chairs, members of the committee. I'm Mary Sell here, speaking on behalf of Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. I am currently testifying on 2306. At this point, Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers is neutral on the bill. We have been part of the work group, and we are hopeful that after just a few further amendments to the Dash 1, that we can actually support the bill. We absolutely understand what the stakeholders are trying to do here, and we do support the concept absolutely. There are just a couple sections that I want to bring to your attention and kind of talk about what we've brought up in the meeting and what we're hoping to see edited. The first would be Section 1. There's a list of the people who are to receive the information, and defense attorneys are not on that list. And so we would very much ask for us to actually be included. We think it's imperative that we're added. Based on the conversations that we've had with the stakeholders, I don't think anybody is objecting to that. The other concern that we have is essentially how extensive the information sharing is. We do understand that administrative rules would be developed to outline that, but we do believe that there's a potential for for overbreadth. And so what we're hoping happens is that we can kind of have a conversation to figure out what is this going to look like. We don't necessarily think it's appropriate for every single law enforcement officer to have every single person's treatment plan every day when they're out on the beat and talking to people. We do understand that this information is necessary, but we want to make sure that it's being shared in a way that is protective of the people experiencing these mental health crises. What we can say is we absolutely believe that everyone in the meeting has been acting in good faith, and we do think that we can support the bill once kind of that amendment is discussed more fully. The other piece that I want to address is essentially, and the bill requiring an evaluation always be done prior to a person being sent to the hospital for 370 treatment. We understand that they very much want to guard the door, and we understand why. However, in practice, a lot of times there are people in the jail who are experiencing these very obvious mental health crises. And so what we're hoping to do is to be able to
act quickly so that we don't have people who are in these in terrible distress in the jail. And so what we want to be able to do is have the mental health or community mental health, the DA, the defense, the judge, kind of all get together as soon as possible and say, you know what, based on the information we're receiving from the jail, based on these representations, this person really should go to the state hospital right away versus sitting in the jail for weeks at a time to receive that 365 evaluation. And so what we're essentially suggesting is a type of escape valve. We discussed that, and I think that the stakeholders are open to that. And I can answer questions if you have any. Thank you.
Questions, Representative Vile.
Mary, I understand your point about the defense lawyers having the information available as well. And by now, my famous lack of knowledge on these issues is going to become very apparent here. What really is the harm if even the beat cop or everybody in the process has the opportunity to understand where this person's been, what their treatment evaluation programs have been, et cetera? I'm missing the fear that you're expressing.
Sure. Chair Barker, Representative Vile, that's a good question. I think the way that I want to approach that and the way that I want to address that is essentially we don't want, And when OCDLA is talking, we're talking about our clients who are being investigated for crimes, coming into contact with law enforcement, and possibly other people who have information that, if they don't understand, if they don't know how to analyze it, or it's giving them information that might not be current, we don't want that informing how they interact with our potential clients. And so that, and so that's the worry about this information possibly not being current, and also essentially informing the interaction when it might not actually provide them information that's going to make that interaction smooth.
Follow up, Chair Barker.
Follow up, please.
Yeah, I'm hearing that, but isn't that kind of where we are right now? Isn't that what got us to where we are? Is everybody's kind of worried that sharing this information without knowing for sure that it's all going to be there and that the person you're talking to is going to understand everything, et cetera. Isn't that kind of why we've got the problem we've got?
Chair Barker, Representative Vile, I'm not sure if I can really answer that. I guess what I
may be rhetorical, and I apologize.
It might be. No, it's okay. And I think, I guess what I can say is we understand why the information, why the people want the information to be shared. We're not opposed to that in whole cloth, but we do want it to be more nuanced.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Aaron Knott. I'm the legislative director for the Attorney General of the Oregon Department of Justice. We, too, are neutral on House Bill 2306. To give a little background on the meetings that have been happening to date, at some time, I think about 9 months ago, we started to become aware that there were going to be quite a few bills coming in this area. And so in consultation with committee counsel, the Department of Justice pulled a group together to try and look at every bill side by side before we got into this committee hearing today. And this was quite a large group. It had, in addition to the health authority, the state hospital, the Department of Justice, the sheriffs, the DAs, OCDLA, Disability Rights Oregon, community healthcare providers, the Association of Oregon Counties, the Association of Oregon Counties Mental Health Experts, and so forth. And I think I didn't cover everybody, but it was a big and robust group. It evaluated all four of the bills that are under consideration today. And I'd like to start by thanking the health authority for having such a willingness to look at amendments to all of the bill concepts. I'm only going to testify on this one, but it really was true throughout that they listened to stakeholders. There's a lot of engagement. That being said, 2306 is probably of the four concepts the one that is currently the most difficult for the group. Some of that is just a function of timing, you know, with the negotiation. If you look at the Dash 1 amendments, you'll see that they came out, I believe, last Thursday. We pulled the group together on Friday and had some preliminary discussions. And I will note, Chair Barker, Representative Vile, the Department of Justice does share some of the concerns about While there is obviously a need for improved information sharing, something that came out when we were all talking collectively is that sometimes this flow of information is one way. It's meant to guide a decision point. Law enforcement is passing information along to an assessor so they can make a good assessment about treatment. It might not flow the same way in the other direction. That's just one example. It's more complicated than saying everyone should talk to everyone, which is what the rules say right now. There's another aspect to 2306 that hasn't gotten much discussion but is very important. It represents the beginning of a pivot away from the court as the primary decider about what happens to a person in terms of subsequent care towards the director of the health authority. And this is something we just need a little bit more time to talk about. Those two actors, at least the way the system works now, don't rely on exactly the same information. Judges, as you know, receive a lot of criminal history information, other criminogenic information, information from victims, which is a different lens than the health authority, and we're still working through that. So I think ultimately, like my counterpart at OCDLA, we are hoping to be able to ultimately support this concept. We are unable to do so now, but we are committed to host further discussions as needed.
Thank you, Representative Vile.
Aaron, do you know if we're going to hear from the judges on that concept?
Chair Barker, Representative Vile, the OJD has been present in our work groups, and they have been an active participant. I don't know what they will and will not testify on, but they have been at the table throughout the conversation.
And follow up? And your sense is that the judiciary is worried about having to share that information, or am I not hearing that correctly?
Chair Barker, Representative Vile, I do not want to put words into the mouth of the judiciary. I do think you'll be hearing from another panel about some concerns. I didn't mean to give the impression they originated solely from judges. I think they're just concerns expressed on the work group.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Aaron, I want to make sure that I'm on the right page with this. So, are we talking about both situations where law enforcement responds to someone with emotional distress and takes them on a police hold and they're evaluated at the local hospital, whoever has contract, as well as people who may have been arrested for committing a crime and then the mental illness come? Are we talking about both of those groups?
Chair Barker, Representative Gorsuch, I'm not a practitioner in this area, but my understanding is that the statutory provisions that we've been discussing the most, 365 and 370, originate with the imposition of criminal charges. So okay. I think the attempting to divert somebody who's in crisis because they are a danger to themselves or others. I see the first page.
Yeah.
Which,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm just looking to see what provision we're modifying here. Yeah, I'm seeing 370. So my guess, and again, this might require a little follow-up, but just from that citation, is that we are only looking at people who are facing formal criminal proceedings okay. And are unable to aid and assist.
So not the folks that are
not
being diverted into.
Chair Barker, Representative Gorsuch, not mobile crisis team or community
okay.
engagement.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you.
May I make just
yeah,
a quick
sure.
comment on that?
Yeah.
Chair Barker, Representative Gorsuch, I think those are two separate mm-hmm. Kind of individuals, but I do want to point out from my personal perspective as a practitioner that those slide together. A lot of times we're initially dealing with someone who is experiencing a mental health crisis and they lock themselves in a bathroom of a 7-Eleven, and then that turns into a criminal trespass case. So we really are, I think, talking about the same people. Thank you.
Quick follow-up. Of course, that depends. This is a comment more than anything. That really depends, too, on the law enforcement officer. I mean, many of us, myself included, would just consider that part of the whole mental illness episode and transported them to the hospital without a criminal charge. But other officers may take a different approach.
And I've seen both,
okay.
Representative Barker, Representative Gorsuch. I've seen both. And
Thank
so I think the conversation, the further the conversation goes, the more likely it might, the latter might happen, which would be positive.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next I'll call Kevin Neely and Melissa, I'm sorry, I can't read their
Marrero.
That's the one.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, Vice Chair Williamson, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kevin Neely, and I represent the Oregon District Attorneys Association. I mostly wanted to come in here as the non-practitioner that gives a little quick overview of the district attorney's role in the process. I think that these bills today underscore, as many of you already know, that increasingly this intersection between the human services and the public safety system has put a drain on the system. The district attorneys are keenly aware of the imposition of this work on the state hospital, and I can tell you that the folks at the state hospital have come to us on a couple of occasions, and it has been really a fantastic relationship that has developed. And I think the outcome of that is most district attorneys are keenly aware of what's happening as it relates to this population of individuals. And have worked very hard to try to come to a resolution that lessens the impact on the Oregon State Hospital. That's a work in progress. There's no question about it. But it's an important work in progress that is critical to district attorneys. I wish that District Attorney Walt Beglau could be here today. Unfortunately, he couldn't. He'd be delivering this testimony instead of me. And I think he, as has been said earlier, has been a key player in understanding just how critical these issues are. So with that backdrop, what I will do is turn the microphone over to the professional here and just indicate that while right now I testified and I noted that I would be in opposition to this bill, I want to, again, as many before me have said, commit to working as closely as we can and as we have done. The state hospital reached out to us many months ago about these bills. We are committed to continuing to work with these. We are committed to ensuring that the right people are the ones that are ending up in the state hospital. But this bill still has a little bit of room to grow before we can be fully comfortable with it. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions, though Mel is really the expert on these issues.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Barker, Vice Chair Williamson, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to address you here today. My name is Melissa Marrero. I am a deputy district attorney in Multnomah County. I was formerly our designated mental health deputy, and I'm speaking here today on behalf of not only the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, but also the Oregon District Attorney's Association. To begin, I will note that we are in support of the Section 1 provisions of the Dash 1 Amendment relating to information sharing. Although we believe refinement of the exact statutory language is necessary, we appreciate that the Oregon Health Authority has included district attorneys among the entities among whom information must be shared. We believe that this will increase collaboration among the entities, and it's a positive step forward. However, we are opposed to Section 2. Section 2 mandates without exception that the courts must receive an examination report by a certified evaluator prior to sending somebody to the Oregon State Hospital for fitness restoration. This is a significant change in current law and practice, which currently allows the courts to make such determinations on a variety of factors if the evidence of incompetency is clear. The Dash 1 amendment would effectively deprive the court of the authority to do so, even in cases where all involved parties agree that an individual needs inpatient restorative services. Should this bill pass as written, there will undoubtedly be cases in which a mentally ill defendant who's unable to aid and assist their attorney will be forced to sit in jail while we await the completion of a report, the results of which we anticipate will surprise nobody. I would expect that many, if not all, mental health professionals would probably tell you that this is not an appropriate therapeutic environment for these individuals. And frankly, the cost of maintaining an individual in the jail who is neither working towards competency or working to resolve their criminal case is unjustifiable. Of even greater concern, however, Section 2 of the bill inappropriately divests the judiciary of their role in determining whether defendants who are found unable to aid and assist, whether those folks should be treated at the Oregon State Hospital or whether community services are sufficient to restore them in an outpatient setting. Under current law and under the Dash 1 amendment, the court can commit a defendant for restoration of fitness to proceed. They can send them to the state hospital only if they make findings, and those findings either need to be that they are dangerous to themselves or others as a result of their mental disease or defect, or that the community resources are not sufficient to treat that person in an outpatient setting. So currently, a defendant committed upon such findings goes to the Oregon State Hospital. The Dash 1 Amendment Section 2 proposes to give to alter the law so that the commitment is then to the Oregon Health Authority, who will then be tasked with determining whether this person is appropriate to be in the state hospital or whether community restoration is acceptable. This would allow the authority to essentially ignore or overrule the court's previous findings that they just made with regard to dangerousness and with regard to whether community restoration is sufficient or appropriate. It essentially gives the Oregon Health Authority the authority to release a criminal defendant into the community anytime a defendant is deemed unable to aid and assist. These release decisions are critically important public safety decisions that impact the local victims, communities, and treatment providers. The courts currently make these decisions for their communities based solely on an informed analysis of a defendant's particular circumstances and not subject to other unrelated pressures. We believe that the courts, for this and many other reasons, are clearly better equipped and more appropriate than the health authority to make these specific decisions. To the contrary, were House Bill 2306-1 to be passed as it's written today, the health authority would be free to decide whether an individual needs a hospital level of care relative to the needs of its other patients, and which is, we believe, inappropriate, and it's not contemplated by the law. Through their testimony, written and oral, it is clear that this would occur. Although it is necessary for the health authority and the state hospital to meet the metrics that were laid out by the United States Department of Justice, as those metrics relate to civil commitment patients and beds that are available, those metrics cannot be met by compromising community safety or by forcing our local jurisdictions to treat individuals who have already been determined to be untreatable in a community setting. It should be noted that although House Bill 2306-1 requires the health authority to consult with community mental health program directors, it does not give those community programs any recourse if they disagree with the decisions made by the health authority. Similarly, the courts and the parties would have no meaningful ability to challenge the health authority's decision or to mandate that it be revisited if community placement was proving ineffective. Finally, it disregards the rights of crime victims who, under Article 1, Sections 42 and 43, have specific rights related to having the courts determine the safety of the community and of the victims themselves when making release decisions. For all of these reasons, the Oregon District Attorney's Association, the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, respectfully opposes House Bill 2306-1. However, on that note, we are happy to continue working with the Oregon Health Authority, and we appreciate the opportunity to continue doing so. I will note, Representative Vile, you had asked a question regarding the court's position on this. And if I may, I did have a chance after receiving the Dash 1 amendment on Thursday to speak with the Honorable Ed Jones, who is the chief criminal judge in Multnomah County. And Judge Jones sent me an email this morning. It's brief. And if I may, I believe it will provide some insight into where he is, at least. I don't believe he's speaking for the entire judicial department. In fact, I know that he's not, but if I may, I would like to relay that to the committee. Judge Jones indicates that he is the chief criminal judge in Multnomah County. He personally supervises the aid and assist docket and is very familiar with the relevant statutes, the operation of the state hospital, and local resources needed for the restoration of competence. Judge Jones says, I am not speaking for the judicial branch, but merely for myself, based on my experience with these issues. I am very much in support of the original goal of House Bill 2306. It was intended to improve the information sharing among the agencies and programs that work with those who have both mental health challenges and criminal justice system involvement. Such defendants are often poor historians and often have received intermittent services from multiple providers. This makes prompt identification of providers and disclosure of records difficult, which slows treatment, extends time in custody, and reduces the chance for a good outcome. As it stands, the information sharing section of the bill has some issues, but the concept is good, and the bill will help control costs and improve those outcomes. I do not support the amendments which require an evaluation by a certified examiner prior to commitment at OSH. The required evaluation will leave many defendants about whom there is no dispute regarding their lack of competence to languish in jail while the evaluation is sought and completed. We have recently started a rapid evaluation program in Multnomah County, but even it merely reduces for a few defendants the time needed from months to weeks. For many, and particularly for those in the most obvious distress, every extra day means it will be harder to restore them and more likely that they will have future difficulties.
nor do I support the shifting of authority over 370 patients from the court to the Oregon Health Authority. OHA is poorly equipped to make public or victim safety assessments, which are often case-specific and always dependent on the array of supervision and treatment services available to the court and in the immediate community. I'm confident the statutory scheme can be improved, but these changes do not make things better. Thank you, Chair. I'm happy to take any questions.
Questions? Representative Bile.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you for that, Melissa. I totally get the idea that we got to figure out who's in charge, and your advocacy for the judiciary remaining in charge makes a lot of sense in the world. But I really did like the idea that we were going to get more information shared. And I'm wondering how you respond to Mary's observation that maybe the defense lawyers ought to be involved as well.
Oh, Your Honor, I'm sorry.
There's a slip.
It happens.
Chair Barker, Representative Bile, you can tell that I'm a trial attorney.
Indeed.
We agree that defense attorneys should be included.
Okay. Thank
Absolutely.
You very much.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Very much. Okay, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2306. And open a public hearing on House Bill 2307.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2307 provides that insanity evaluations conducted in a criminal case need not address the defendant's ability to aid and assist in their defense unless the ability to do so is drawn into question during the evaluation. House Bill 2307, as introduced, has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Okay, thank you. Mickey Logan, Mary Sell, and Bob Jundep, please.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, I am Mickey Logan. I'm the Legal Affairs Director at the Oregon State Hospital. I am here to testify in support of House Bill 2307, which clarifies that a full competency evaluation, also called a fitness to proceed or 370 evaluation, is not needed in order to conduct an evaluation for guilty except for insanity, or GEI. When someone pleads guilty except for insanity, it means they claim that they were suffering from severe mental illness at the time of their crime. In many cases, this is a very short period of incoherence, and it's followed by restored lucidity. Many attorneys erroneously believe that a full competency evaluation is necessary to conduct a GEI evaluation. However, the two different kinds of evaluations, a 370 evaluation or a GEI evaluation, are different evaluations. And I supervise the forensic evaluators at the state hospital, so I hear about this a lot. GEI evaluations assess whether someone who was too mentally ill at the time that they committed the crime to understand the consequences of their actions. Competency evaluations, on the other hand, assess if the defendant is able or not able to aid and assist at the time of their defense, at the time of trial. So they're two different time periods. House Bill 2307 is consistent with clinical and forensic standards for certified evaluators. When those evaluators evaluate someone for guilty except for insanity, they're trained to not proceed with the guilty except for insanity evaluation if the defendant's competency to aid and assist comes into question, if that arises as an issue. If at that time, while they're doing the evaluation, then they will stop doing the evaluation. Oregon State Hospital and the Oregon Health Authority support this bill, and we request your support as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
When somebody comes to the hospital under the GEI route, you have to decide how to treat them at that point, theoretically, or they may or may not have extant mental illness right at that point. You're not saying that you don't need to do an evaluation of their clinical needs at the time they're admitted to the hospital.
Representative Barker, Representative Greenlick, that's correct. There's always evaluation going on all the time. I should clarify, a 370 or aid and assist evaluation is a very lengthy evaluation. Includes a full medical workup. It by Oregon Health Authority rules, the certified evaluators have to do a whole lot of work, and I'm sure judges could tell you they create a big report for a 370 evaluation. Similarly, there's a very thorough evaluation for guilty except for insanity, but it's evaluating a different time period. Right now, forensic evaluators, most of them do not conduct a full 370 evaluation at the time that they do the GEI evaluation. They do figure out what the person's needs are, what was going on at the time of the crime. There's a whole lot of stuff that goes into it. It's not a short report. But what happens as a practical matter is many of the GEI evaluations are conducted by doctors at the state hospital, forensic evaluators at the state hospital. And when they go to court to testify about those evaluations, it frequently happens that attorneys and judges are like, well, where's the 370 evaluation? Where's the aid and assist? And this would simply clarify that evaluation wasn't needed to conduct a guilty except for insanity evaluation. I hope that helps.
Thank you.
Chair Barker, Vice Chairs, members of the committee, Mary Sell again on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. I am just briefly going to outline a few points. We are neutral on the bill. I think really all we want to say is when we first read this, our kind of position was, well, if it's necessary, it'll get done, right? And I think that's the consensus, that if it's necessary, it will get done. We do understand that there are two separate evaluations. And I guess the only other point would be, or question might be, is if we request it, can it get done? And it sounds like if we're requesting a 370, it'll get done. So we're neutral. It was just a brief testimony. I wanted to make sure that you heard from us on it.
Okay, thank you. Bob.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Bob Junda from Disability Rights Oregon. We support House Bill 2307 purely as a matter of fiscal carefulness. There are limited resources for a hospital, and the money that goes to the hospital is all general fund money. It isn't matched. We need to be using it effectively where it needs to be used, and that is why we support this bill.
Okay, thank you. Any questions?
Mayor, can I try again on that question? Mary pointed out there are two evaluations. I think there are three evaluations. One is an evaluation of a patient in the hospital for that patient needs.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. This bill doesn't affect that at all.
That's correct.
That was what I was trying to make.
I apologize. I did not understand you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2307. Open the work session on House Bill 2307.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2307 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is that a substitute?
No. Representative Williamson moves House Bill 2307 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Williamson will be the carrier. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2308.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2308 includes each day served in jail in calculating the maximum period of time a criminal defendant may be committed for restorative mental health services pending trial. For purposes of the public hearing today, there is a -2 amendment before you. The amendment excludes defendants charged with aggravated murder or specified crimes with mandatory minimum sentences. Thank you.
Okay. Mickey Logan, Bob June, Deputy Mary Sell again, please.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, I am Mickey Logan. I'm the Legal Affairs Director at the Oregon State Hospital. I am here to testify in support of House Bill 2308, which would give OSH patients under the aid and assist orders credit for time they spent in jail. Currently, those defendants cannot be committed for longer than 3 years or a period of time equal to the maximum sentence the defendant would receive if they were convicted, whichever is shorter. These time periods are measured from the defendant's initial OSH commitment date, not their time in jail date. The Attorney General's Office has advised OSH that patients committed pursuant to ORS 161-370, which we call 370 patients, cannot get credit for time they spend in jail unless the court explicitly orders that they get that credit. In other words, the statute only gives them credit for time they're at the hospital. This is different than how the statutes who treat patients who have been found guilty except for insanity. If you're found guilty except for insanity, you will get time or credit for your time you spent in jail. House Bill 2308 amends ORS 161-370 so that aid and assist patients will automatically get credit in time for jail. The proposed amendment to House Bill 2308 would not apply this credit to defendants charged with mandatory minimum sentences such as murder, rape, sodomy, serious crimes, Oregon State Hospital and Oregon Health Authority support this bill and the amendment, and we request your support as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Bob Junda from Disability Rights Oregon. Disability Rights Oregon supports House Bill 2308. The source of this three-year cap comes from federal constitutional law. There's a case called Jackson versus Indiana that held that if the state is going to hold somebody, deny them of their freedom in order to restore them to capacity to face trial, it can't do so indefinitely. There has to be a limit upon how long that person can be held. And the Supreme Court came in saying that 3 years was about the right amount of time. So the question is, why is the state holding on to somebody, and for what purpose? And what House Bill 2308 would clarify was that when a person's in the status of being held because of questions about their mental health ability to face charges, that the entire time that they're being held, wherever they're being held, should be taken into account. And it just makes sense to us, and that's why we support the bill.
Okay, thank you.
Hi there, Chair Barker, members of the committee. Mary Sell on behalf of Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. In regard to 2308, we are in support. We absolutely believe it's imperative that, that our clients are receiving credit for the time that they spent in jail. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, Kevin Neely. No questions. Thank you, panel.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, Kevin Neely on behalf of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. We are here. I signed up as neutral, but frankly, we support the bill with dash, I think they're the dash two amendments. And we are grateful for the hardworking efforts of the Oregon State Hospital and their staff to help us get over the hump on this bill. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. We don't have that amendment ready to go today, so I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2308 and open a hearing.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Could I make a motion to suspend rules?
Yes.
So Representative Olson could vote on House Bill 2307?
Are there any objections to suspending the rules so Representative Olson can vote on House Bill 2307? Seeing none, so we'll reopen the work session on 2307, and how do you vote?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2309.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2309 authorizes the Oregon Health Authority to adopt rules prescribing the contents of reports evaluating a criminal defendant's ability to aid and assist in their own defense. There is a dash two amendment. The dash two amendment replaces the bill and provides that a report documenting a committed defendant's progress may consist of an update to an earlier examination. With the dash two amendments, House Bill 2309 has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Okay, again. And Bob, come on again, please.
Chair Barker and members of the committee, I am Mickey Logan, Legal Affairs Director at the Oregon State Hospital. I am here to testify in support of House Bill 2309, which allows evaluators to avoid unnecessary rework when they reevaluate OSH patients who are under aid and assist orders, also referred to as 370 orders. The high number of patients under aid and assist orders at OSH continues, as you've heard this afternoon, to be problematic. Under the current statutes and rules, evaluators must draft comprehensive evaluations every time they assess a patient. This includes an entire medical history. This rework takes up a great deal of time and resources for hospital evaluators who serve defendants from throughout the state. Their time could be better spent evaluating patients whose treatment teams have indicated that they are ready to leave the hospital. Moreover, we have a limited number of forensically certified evaluators at Oregon State Hospital. Actually, there's a limited number of evaluators throughout the state, but at Oregon State Hospital, that also holds true. And they all hold an extremely large workload. In 2016, OSH's forensic evaluators signed 1,346 evaluations. They filed an average of 5.36 court-ordered evaluations each business day. Well, the forensic, not each of them, that's forensic evaluation service at the state hospital. Each full-time evaluator, OSH, conducts an average of 3 aid and assist evaluations per week. This is a high but reasonable workload in comparison to other state forensic evaluation services. And House Bill 2309 amends the 370 statute so that only the first 370 evaluations must include the full medical history and the thorough evaluation. It allows subsequent 370 evaluations to be progress reports or updates. Note that this change also significantly reduces unnecessary paperwork. The Oregon State Hospital and the Oregon Health Authority support this bill, and we request your support as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Bob Junda from Disability Rights Oregon. We support House Bill 2309, again, as a fiscal matter. And just beside our interest in the state purse, individuals who come into this system, in the criminal justice system, had a constitutional right to have their both their evaluations and their treatment happen in a expeditious fashion, an effective fashion. There is a Ninth Circuit opinion out now talking about there being caps both in terms of the speediness of evaluations and the resolution of 370 matters. The state, we know, has fiscal challenges right now. They may be exacerbated by things going on in Washington. There's going to be a lot of pressure put on the state hospital budget. We think it's very important that we make this process as efficient as possible.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Okay, thank you. And Mary Sell and Cheryl Ramirez.
Chair Barker, Vice Chairs, members of the committee, Mary Sell again, and probably for the last time this afternoon, on behalf of Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers. I'm just here testifying to let you know our perspective on 2309, and we are neutral, and so we understand the idea of the progress reports saving time, saving money, and also actually helping our clients. And so that's our position. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, members of the committee. I'm Cheryl Ramirez. I'm the director of the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Programs, representing the lead community mental health system partner in working with defendants of Aid and Assist. We're also in the work group working with all of our other partners to help develop and improve these concepts. So I'm really speaking about all of the concepts as a group right now, rather than one bill. We're neutral on 2309. I think we actually pretty much support 2309, but I want to just give you like five concerns about the group of bills. In general, we support community restoration and treatment for that matter whenever possible in the community. The concerns we have about where we're at with Aid and Assist is that in order to do appropriate restoration in the community, we need adequate resources. So this is about building capacity rather than just reimbursing for XYZ services. So, for example, it takes a lot more work and resources to develop 24/7 supervised secure placements rather than just putting someone up in a hotel room with some supports. There's just a big difference in the resources of those two types of services. A second concern we have is individuals who refuse to work with anyone in the community, and then the default will be jail, which certainly sets them up for bad outcomes. We're concerned about those individuals. Third, and this has been brought up before, who has the final say on where the person is placed? Although we're not saying here we want to be the final decider, community mental health programs certainly want to participate in the decision. We know better than anybody the reality of the resources that we have in our communities. Fourth, communication is particularly important to the success of the person who's a defendant of Aid and Assist. So it's very, very important for community mental health programs to be updated on the fitness of the defendant and on the status of the evaluations. We also believe that appropriate information sharing among Oregon State Hospital, evaluators, the court system, and the community mental health programs is extremely important to the success of the Aid and Assist client. And then last, and this pertains really to 2309, we believe that the increased use of 365 evaluations or the equivalent is really important to even prevent someone from getting to 370 in the first place. We don't believe those particular screening tools, evaluations, are used as much as they should be. Thanks for the opportunity to provide testimony.
Thank you. Okay. So we have the dash two amendments. Do you want to just go over this?
Sure, Chair, Chair, members of the committee, the dash two amendments replace the printed bill, and they provide that a report documenting a committed defendant's progress may consist of an update to an earlier examination. So the amendments don't require a complete re-examination of the defendant when the evaluator has put together the progress report.
Okay. All right, Mr. Chair, I move the dash two amendments to House Bill 2309.
Representative Williamson moves the dash two amendments to House Bill 2309. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2309 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 2309 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Again, any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
I'm sure that might be a consent calendar item.
We can put that on. That's good. We'll put that on the consent calendar.
You know, honestly, I don't. I'll bring it up.
Okay.
2309. Sure, I'll carry it.
Representative Olson will be a carrier. We'll take the floor. We're going to roll the work session on 2409 over to Thursday. Now we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2561.
Work session.
I'm sorry, work session. Thank you. On House Bill 2561. Josh.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2561 requires the Public Defense Services Commission to compensate public defenders and their staff at rates comparable to similarly practicing district attorneys in the county. There is a dash one amendment that employs language consistent with a contractual relationship rather than an employment relationship.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments into House Bill 2561.
Representative Williams moves the dash one amendments into House Bill 2561. Any objections?
Yes, I just want a question on that.
Okay, it's our discussion.
Does that mean that it only applies to the contract defense attorneys and, I mean, to the, how do you call it?
Not to the state.
Not to the departments?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee, my understanding is that's correct. It applies to the trial lawyers, and my understanding is that the trial defense lawyers are all by contract.
By contract as individuals, or?
No. They all have contracts with the Public Defense Services Commission.
Well, the Metropolitan Public Defenders and the Multnomah Public Defenders.
I have a clarifier.
Chair Barker, Representative Greenlee, the statute affected.
Identify yourself.
Oh, sure. Eric Dietrich, Deputy General Counsel, Office of Public Defense Services. The statute affects trial level providers. Most of the trial level providers are by contract statewide. However, there are some providers that we compensate, the agency compensates on an hourly basis. But it would apply to all contract level, trial level providers and hourly trial level providers.
But, Eric, if I may.
Please.
What I was talking about is the organizations that the state contracts with. They're not contracting with the individual provider, I mean, with the individual attorneys in that case, right? But they're still included in this?
Chair Barker, Representative Greenlee, yes, an organization like Metropolitan Public Defenders or Multnomah Defenders, the agency under this bill would be required to enter into contracts with entities like that to make sure that they compensate their attorneys at a rate commensurate with the district attorneys or their staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
But can I clarify something just for the record, that even the lawyers who are paid hourly are under contract, they're not employees of Public Defense Services Commission?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So, got a motion for the dash one.
Okay, we have a motion, right, for the dash one. Are there any objections to the dash one amendments? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2561 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 2561 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a
subsequent
subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Oh, that's good. Ways and Means, huh?
Yeah. Unless that guy wants to write the check right now.
There's a slight, going to be a slight cost on that one.
Yeah.
Okay. So we, are there any objections to the motion? Or any discussion, please?
Thank you, Chair Barker. I'm quickly learning why my good friend in the Senate, Jackie Winters, refuses to be on policy and Ways and Means. This is another example of a fantastic idea that I would love to see happen. And as it moves to the next phase, the fiscal realities of this in this current setting is going to be quite interesting to see how that plays out. So I'm going to vote yes because I like the concept. I think this would, you know, fairness makes sense, and money doesn't always equal fairness. So.
Okay, thank you. And it is only March. Time. Not done yet. So thank you, Representative Stark. And. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Are there any objections to the bill?
And no carrier. It's going to Ways and
Means. Ways and Means. Okay. Any further business? We are adjourned. Thank you, committee. Any further business? We are adjourned. Thank you, committee.